Several years ago, somebody came to visit us on Shabbos. They noticed there was a sefer sitting on the table called the Balei Nefesh La'Raidit. So the particular bacher came from a yeshiva that's very Musar oriented. So he saw, wow, the Balei Nefesh La'Raidit. He couldn't believe it that the Raidit wrote a Musar sefer that they don't know about. So he opens it up, expecting some real heavy duty Musar Sharam Shara Tshuva, some real, you know, heavy duty Musar. And he's opening up, and everybody that will learn the Balei Nefesh La'Raidit knows. So that was the Raidit sefer Nuchas Nida and Nuchas Mikvos. It was called the Balei Nefesh. He was looking, he was very, very disappointed. So he asked me, you know, my high, how can you call it the Balei Nefesh? I said, the Rebbe telling you that if a person really learns Luchas Nida, Luchas Tara, Mikvah, and Tfilas, and then the name will become a Gevalah, Gevalah Muslim. So of course will be an Ish Kadosh. That would be the learning of the Halachas of these Inyanim, will be a tremendous chizuk for a person to become an Ish Kadosh. So he didn't buy it. But anyway, that was my take on the situation. So a few people asked me when we announced that we were speaking about Bahayim HaKhanecha Kadosh. Some people thought that they were, maybe they thought, I don't want to give a real shiur on Nitlnach. So they thought I was going to talk about mushy stuff tonight. So that's not right. They said that I'm going to give a real shiur. So we're still not sure, what am I talking about exactly? I'm not going to Kaddish. So I thought that it would be a combination of a few reasons to give this particular sugya. One is that it happens to be there are many communities that have the custom during these weeks, the weeks of Hashavavim. Shmos Eirvot was read the first of the weeks. So to give in Yom about the Taras HaMishpacha, to give Shirum about Taras HaMishpacha. So the Maisha, last year we gave Taras HaMishpacha Shirum, so that was already Yotze last year's Chiyam. So this year I figured instead of giving about Taras HaMishpacha per se, so we talk about some in Yom which are Tara oriented and Kedusha oriented, and then they all fall into this general heading of Ahayim HaKadosh. So the particular sugya that we're going to be learning in terms of Ahayim HaKadosh are the sugya, the basic sugya of when a person is in the middle of saying Kriya Shema, learning Torah, or saying Divrei Brachas, or Tefillah, or anything, what types of things are not appropriate to be in the person's presence, particularly individuals who are not dressed appropriately? What are the halachas governing saying Dvarim Shel Kedusha in the presence of people who are not dressed appropriately? And we're going to use the sugya really to branch out to many of the dinim of Tznias and Tara and Kedusha, and this area of halacha are discussed actually by the poskim in this particular siman, in this sugya of Hilchos Kriya Shema. So many of the klolim about Hilchos Tznias in general pop up. So I thought we'd just take the opportunity from this week and next week to try to get a little bit of a better handle of these sugyas. So we're going to start from the sugya of Kriya Shema per se, from the sugya of Tefillah and Brachas, how this plays out, and then we'll see as we go along how it's going to play out to other assorted areas as well. So the sugya begins in the first of the Marmakomos, in Maseches Brachas, and Daf Chachamid Beis. So Amar Rava, Soa Ba'ashashis Muta Likros Kriya Shema Kenegda. So the first opening line of the sugya is not even talking about our sugya per se, it's talking about Soa. It means a person went to the bathroom, a dirty diaper, that's Soa. So what is that halacha? When is a person permitted to say Kriya Shema in the presence of something that smells doesn't smell good? When is one allowed to say brachas and tefillah and Kriya Shema and learn all these things in the presence of Tzoa? So there is a poskim chomish v'hayim lechanecha kadosh, which speaks about how we have to maintain the kedusha. And one of the things that the Torah spells out in terms of maintaining kedusha is that the place has to be clean of these types of things. So if a person just went to the bathroom, maybe just has a dirty diaper, so that's a potential problem in HaTorah, saying Dvarim Shel Kedusha in the presence, there will be a violation of this din by Hamach Nechak Kodesh. So Rabbi comes up with the Chiddush, and Rabbi tells us, what's the din of Yav Tzoa? And it's covered with Tzoa, but it's see-through. It's covered by a piece of glass. It's covered by something that Lamais is not exposed. But on the other hand, you can see right through. So Rabbi says, that's okay. One is permitted to say Kriya Shema on Tzoa Be'ashashis. However, Erev Abiyah Shoshis also because Kriya Shema Kenegda. The other here for those Ksukim in Parashat Kisete, that speak about Bahar Machanecha Kadosh, so the Torah says that not only was the Machan, and here Chazal interpreting the Machan, not only to mean Pshuta Shemikra, like the army camp that's the Pasuk is simply talking about, but it means anytime you have Shechina, anytime you have a Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence, anytime you mention the Shem Hashem, anytime you say Divrei Torah, those are all extensions of Bahar Machanecha Kadosh. So one has to make sure there's no tzoa around, one has to make sure there's no erva around. So Rava draws a distinction and says that tzoa b'ashashis is mutter l'kos kriyishma kenegda, but erva b'ashashis is also l'kos kriyishma kenegda. One is not permitted to say kriyishma in the presence of erva. And again, we're going to have a, hopefully by the end of next week we'll know what that means, hopefully. By in the presence of erva, one is not permitted to say kriyishma, the Torah, brachas, etc. Even if it's covered over, even if it's covered up with something, if it's covered up by something which is a shash, or something which is clear, see-through. So the Gemara explains why the difference. Both of these dinim, the issur of kriyishma in the presence of erev, and the issur of kriyishma in the presence of tzoa, appear the same. Sukkim and Chumash of Ashkesetei, why the distinction of Mahalacha, why tzoa is covered with something transparent, it's okay, and the erev is covered with something transparent, it's a problem. So the Gemara is very simple. Tzoa b'ashash is mutlikus kriyishma kenegda, why is that? Tzoa b'kisui tala rachamana, because the Torah says, v'shalta v'chisisa tzeasef, the Torah says, when you're out there in the field, person goes to the bathroom, so you can't just leave the tzoa around, because how's anyone going to be able to daven and learn and say brachas? So you have to cover it up. So the Torah says, v'chisisa tzeasef. So since the Torah uses the lashon kisui, it doesn't matter what's covered with. It's covered with dirt, it's covered with mud, it's covered with cement, it's covered with a piece of clothing, it's covered with glass, it doesn't matter, it's covered. As long as it's mechusas and then it's mutter. Whereas erba b'ashash is also this grishman kenegda, because the Torah says, v'lo yira b'cha erba's davar, v'chamana v'akam ischazia. The end of the pasuk, the Bashi could say to the Torah says, you have to be careful not just to make sure there's no tzor around b'shas kriyishma, you have to make sure there's no erev around b'shas kriyishma either, because the law yirah b'cha erev is davar, the Rav Hashem shouldn't see any erev is davar b'shas kriyishma, and if he sees things that are not appropriate, so the Rav Hashem t'chalil l'shchin is going to leave us. So comes the Gemara and says, the Torah uses the phrase yirah, b'shin r'iyah, so here when it comes to the yonim of erev, it's clear that it's not a function of just covering, it's a function of not being able to see. So in theory, if a person, if a person is not dressed, a person is actually parts of the body exposed, but they're covered, quote unquote, means they're covered with something which they see through, so the Gemara says that's not called cover for the purposes of Hilchos Kriyashma. That's called cover for the purposes of Tzela, but that's not called cover for the purposes of Kriyashma, because Kriyashma ber iyatala rachamana v'hatka mechazia. So you see from this Gemara a few chidushim la'alacha. First of all, you see from the Gemara that this is clearly a din min haTorah. The Gemara is quoting Pesukim. We're assuming Abrahaman is a real lashon, is a real din deraisa. So we're assuming that this is a real bona fide. These are two bona fide yisurim deraisa to say kriyishma brachas tefillah in the context of tzoa, and similarly to say these kinds of dvarim shel kedusha in the context of erva as well. So the first, it's not really a chiddush, but the first ha'ari you see from the Gemara that we're dealing with dinim deraisa. And number two, you see that even though they appear in the same pasuk, they're fundamentally different from one another. One is a function of kisui, and one is a function of re'iyah. So of course the question becomes, the most important question that we're going to have to deal with over the next 2 weeks, is how do we define precisely, what does this mean, erva? What exactly constitutes erva for these purposes? The Torah says, l'erbucha erva's dava, this is the halakha concept called erva. What exactly does that mean? So comes the Gemara in the second of Mamakonos in Brachas of Chavdal and Aleph, and lists off a whole series of different parts of a woman's body, per se. There are some halachas of a man's body also, but this particular part of the sugya is talking about a woman's body. So the Gemara says there are whole parts, many parts of a woman's body that are pi halacha are considered to be erva. So what does that mean? So I'm Rabbi Yitzchak, and Yitzchak starts out with the following. Tefach the isha erva. First statement, Rabbi Yitzchak, that a mere tefach, a part of a woman's body which is revealed, even the share of a tefach, not all that big, is considered to be the halakhic status of an erva. So the Gemara says, Lamai, what does that statement mean? Lamai nafkamina, that something is an erva. So the Gemara says, Ilayna is the kuliba. Does it mean that if one looks at a tefach of a woman's body, so that's considered to be an isser of histaklos, but if you look at less than that, that's okay. Normally, we know the normal circumstances, one's not supposed to be looking at another woman's body. So comes the Gemara and says, if so, so how could that mean the Rav Yitzchak is telling us that the shear is a tefach? That doesn't make any sense. In Parashas Matnos lists off all the jewelry that when the Jews fought against the Minyanim, so they conquered the Minyanim, they got all the fancy jewelry, so the Pesukim describe all the different jewelry that was conquered from the Minyanim women. So the Pesukim speak about the earrings and the necklaces and the rings, and it speaks about different types of ornaments that the Minyanim women would put, the Osam Makom, would put in their private areas. So the Gemara comments, why did the Torah lump together all the jewelries together? Hakol Mikol Kol. So the Torah started to teach us that of the halacha, it doesn't really make much of a difference whether if a person is looking in order to be a man, a person is gazing at another woman for the purpose for enjoyment, so that would be a prohibition. It doesn't matter what part of the woman's body a person is looking at, whether he's looking at her fingers, looking at Osam Makom in that area, that's all the same thing. In terms of the issue of Istaklos, that's all equated. So that's true. So what does Rabbi Yitzchak mean when he says Tefach Risha Erva? What is the statement? The words don't make any sense. Tefach Risha Erva. The implication would be that you're allowed to look at less than a tefach. That's not true. Mar says even that's a katana one is not permitted to look at. So if so, what is the significance of the Yitzchak statement? The Gemara says, Ela b'ishta l'kriya shma. The Yitzchak is now talking about what a person is permitted to look at and not permitted to look at. It's understood. Of course you're not allowed to look at anything else. You're only allowed to look at your own life. So Imkein, what did Rabbi Yitzchak mean when he says tefach b'isha erva? He meant that it's your own wife. So what do you mean erva? You're allowed to look at Tetra Gomor. So the answer is no, you're in the middle of saying Kriya Shema. You're in the middle of making Kiddush. You're in the middle of Venture. You're in the middle of learning Torah. You're in the middle of davening. You're in the middle of saying Devarim Shabbat Kedusha. So those types of things, if a tefach of the woman, you're looking at a tefach of the woman who happens to be your own wife, that would be a problem. What do the words mean? Tefach b'isha means a tefach anywhere on the woman's body. It means a face, that's also an erva. Her hands are also an erva. That clearly can't be the case. So it must be that Rabbi Yitzchak meant, as we shouldn't explain, it must mean that Rabbi Yitzchak meant those parts of the woman's body that he usually covered. That's what tefach b'isha erva means. It means a part of his, again, we're not talking about somebody else's, we're talking about his own life. So his own life, when he's permitted to look at those parts, unless she's a nida, when she's a nida, he's not allowed to look at the makamos hamachusa shabbat, but at the time she's with teres, so he's permitted to look at the makamos hamachusa shabbat, except for literally also makom, but afa b'chayim, the Gemara says, b'shas kriyashmo, tefillah, brachas, etc., he's not permitted to look at those areas, and if it's more than a tefach, so that's going to be a problem. That would also fall under the category of loyir b'cha ervas davar. So this is quite a chiddush. This is telling us that you have an area which is not erva mamish. We wouldn't call that mamish, you know, literally, physically, the mokum at erva. It doesn't matter. If the minigam mokum in that area is to cover it, that's considered to be the norm in that area to be covered. So that's considered to be at the alocha tefach b'ish erva. Then the Gemara continues, and now lists off a whole series of other parts of a woman's body that are potentially erva for these alochos. Amra chizda shok fi isha erva. If a shok, that part of the leg, and we're not going to translate the word shok exactly yet. We'll see, we'll probably get to this next week in terms of the details, what exactly that means. Just, a little looking ahead to next week. It's a major machlokes is Mishnah Berurah and the Chazanish. What exactly does shok mean? Does shok mean the upper part of the leg? Does shok mean the lower part of the leg? That's tremendous. Not kamina ladina. Hopefully we'll talk about that a little bit later on. So whatever this area is, it's called shok fi isha erva. So Rav Chisda says that's also considered to be an erva. And he quotes a pasuk, Shenemar, Goli, Shok, Ibri, Naros, Uchsiv, Vatagel, Ervasech, Vigamtir, Chetasech, the Tzuchim in Yishayel, use the term erva describing that part of the woman's leg. That's called in halacha the shok. So what is Rav Chisda telling us? Rav Chisda seems to be telling us that besides the first din of Rabbi Yitzchak, the tefach isha erva, so there are certain objective areas that are called an erva in a woman's body. So Rabbi Yitzchak was telling us nothing really objective. Rabbi Yitzchak said tefach isha erva. So the Rishon explained, it can't mean every single part of his body. That mamish makes no sense. We don't find, we're not holding like in certain countries where the woman has to cover, what's it called? Whatever it's called. Okay, good. So that we don't find in the Gemara. We never found the minhag Yisrael. You have to wear those things. So it's understood that the woman's face is permitted to be uncovered. It's understood when the husband's making kiddush, so the woman doesn't have to put a deck tickle over her face. So that's for sure, Mutter. So Rabbi Yitzchak must have meant tefach b'she'er in certain parts of the body that are normally covered. But it can't mean the shok, because shok is a chizda statement. Chizda is saying that shok is for sure also. So what's the significance of Rabbi Yitzchak's statement of tefach? So the answer is that it would appear from the Gemara, according to Yisrael, that the Gemara is telling us that there are really two different standards of erva. There's subjective and there's objective. It means there are certain things, certain parts of a woman's body that are objectively labeled by the halacha as erva. For example, shok to ish erva. We didn't define it, which shok is. But whatever it is, that's a given. That's a chok lo yavo. Then you have other parts, which are tefach ish erva, which are not objectively erva, which may happen. according to the time and place. It means you could theoretically, let's say if a person happens to be in Saudi Arabia and everybody's wearing those things, so then the halacha is that if a woman's standing with her face uncovered, you can't say Krishna there, you can't say brachas there. That's not going to be in the Shulchan Aruch. But if you have a place where the, I don't know whether you would be saying Krishna there for other reasons anyway, but if a person lives in a place where certain parts of the woman's body are covered that the halacha doesn't require to be covered, so those parts of the woman's body, that's the tefach v'isha erva of Rav Yitzchak. But that's not what Rav Chisda is talking about. Rav Chisda is saying, in addition to that, general halacha tefach v'isha erva, there are very, very specific areas that are labeled as an absolute objective erva, and one of them seems to be shelf. That's the simple reading of the Gemara. Oh, here, the Gemara doesn't say that. That's true, the Gemara doesn't say it. The Gemara doesn't say a word about tefach. The Gemara doesn't say a word about the Shia. So comes the Gemara, we'll see, hopefully as we go on. It's also a question. Very good. Okay. We'll see. At the end of the day, the tefach shia is not going to be that critical for us. We'll see, because most of our communities don't have these types of situations where the woman is keeping extra things. Halavai we should be zeicha. People should be dressed the way the halacha requires. If you live in a place like, again, where the women are covering their faces, they're covering their fingers, things like that, so then you would have these dim of tefach. At the end of the day, there's very little left for the tefach to be she'erva l'maisa. Then the Gemara throws another one. Amar Shmuel. Here's a little bit of a play on the Arev and Erva. It doesn't really mean that Chazal realized one's with a bay, one's with a hay. But Chazal just meant to say that from the fact that the Paskin Shir Hashirim is praising the Moshal, is praising the woman in Shir Hashirim, the Moshal Shir Hashirim, that her voice is so beautiful. So you see that the beautiful voice of a woman, that's also potentially considered to be like an Erva. And therefore Shmuel says that the halacha would be that presumably what Shmuel was saying, because the whole sugya seems to be talking about Kriya Shema, so if you just follow the line of reasoning of the Gemara, it would appear that Shmuel was saying that Kol Isha Erva, that's also an objective Erva, so if a person wants to say Kriya Shema, say Divrei Torah or Brach, things like that, in the presence of a Kol Isha Erva, of course it's a very different type of presence. But up till now we were talking about Ber'iyah Torah Rachaman, we were talking about Isurim of Ber'iyah, here we're talking about Shmiyah, but Shmuel seems to equate the Kol B'Ish Erba to the show, to the Tefach, etc. And then to the last of this group of halachas, Amar Sheisha, Seh B'Ish Erba, Shinemar, Sarah Ke'eda Ha'izim, that a woman's hair is also considered to be an Erba for these purposes. Here, notice the Gemara doesn't necessarily say Eishas Ish, the Gemara doesn't say one way or the other, up to see as we go on, but here the Gemara lumps this together with all the other previous things, that there's a din of Tefach B'Ish Erba, there's a din of Shok B'Ish Erba, there's a din of Kol B'Ish Erba, there's a din of Seh B'Ish Erba. And again, the simple meaning of this whole Gemara is that we're talking about the Sukkot, Krishna, Brachas, Tefillah, Divrei Torah, Kedusha, etc. So what we can walk away with from this Gemara is, knowing what we know from the first Gemara, that we're dealing with the Deraisa here, so the Gemara seems to be telling us that the term Erva, for the purposes of these halachas, doesn't only mean literally, Osa Mapa Mamish, but it means all these extended kinds of areas. Some of them are objective, such as the Shok, the Kol, and the Seir. Some of them are somewhat more subjective in terms of may change according to time and place, such as the Tefach B'Isha Erva. But they all seem to be part of the general heading of La Yerbucha Erva's Dava, which is the Torah prohibition against all these types of things in the presence of Erva. That's putting together the two Gemaras. That's all the Gemara we're going to learn probably for the next 2 weeks. Putting together these two Gemaras, so we have a pretty good picture as to what's going on in terms of the sugya. Rebbe Lechora, we have to raise a very basic fundamental chakira about how to understand the combination of these two sugyas that we just learned. They're not that far from each other. One's on Chafem Beis, one's on Chafdal Raf, a number away from a daf away from each other. But Lechora, we have to raise the following question. Before we got to the second of the Marmakomas, so when we learned the first sugya about Erva the Ashoshes, so we thought that Erva meant literally, Erva Mamishli, like the phrase of Chumash, Gilas Ervasa, literally, Eisa Mokom, that's how we would have translated the word Erva. We would have thought that the Yisra Deraisa, where Erva Chavas Dava means to say Kriyashma, Tfila, Brachas, and Mamish, a woman totally undressed, so that would be the Yisra Deraisa, Erva Chavas Dava. So the evidence is that the second of the Mamakamos, the second Gemara, is a little bit of a Chiddush. The Chazal are telling us, we're not questioning the Chiddush, we're just observing that it's a Chiddush. The Gemara is telling us that half a dozen other things are also considered to fall under the category of Erva. But Lechora, one could raise the following chakira, how to understand the relationship between these two sugyas. Do we say that what the Gemara is telling us is that there's really only one din? The one din is Erva. You're not allowed to say Kriyashman Devetar and Tefillah in the presence of a Mokom Erva. question is, what's called a Makom Arba? So the second Gemara is just being Megala to me. The second Gemara is just defining for me. It's opening up the halakhic dictionary and telling me, you thought Arba meant a certain thing. I'm telling you it doesn't mean that. Arba means Tafach Nishav and Seyav and Kol and Shok and maybe some other things that they get cooked into the sugyas will go on. But anything that's in the second sugya is basically just telling me those are considered to be part of halachic erva. And it's basically all the same. There's really no difference to halacha. A person says Kriya Shema in front of the woman who's totally undressed, or in front of the Tefach Mishav, in front of the Shok, in front of the Seir, in the presence of the Kol. It's all the same. It's one din. It's a din of erva. The second sugya is just being megal, it's being mefarish to me what the word erva means. Well, maybe no. Maybe what the Gemara is telling us is that there are really two different sugyas taking place. There are really two different halachas. There's one objective pasuk in Chumash called Yirbecha Ervas Dabar. The definition of the word erva means erva ba'ishim makom. That's what it always means in Kol Tarkula, Gilas, Arvasa. It means one thing and one thing alone. Allah. There's a second halacha that just as a person is not permitted to say Kriya Shema in front of an erva mamish, so you have to stop and ask yourself, why did the Torah say that? Was it from a Gezeres HaKlosso? It's from a Hilchos HaBlo Taima. You're not allowed to say Dvarim Shebe Kedusha in the presence of a Makom Erva. So the answer is that it makes sense that a person is focusing on Dvarim Shebe Kedusha, so it's going to be very difficult for him to be focusing properly on Dvarim Shebe Kedusha. It's going to be Zayin to the Dvarim Shebe Kedusha if he's being Maharer and other things, other inappropriate thoughts at the same time. So it could be that the rationale behind the halacha of Lerbecha Ervas Davar is that how could you possibly say Dvarim Shebe Kedusha in the proper Kovid Rosh? How could you possibly learn and say the Brachas, Kiddush, benching, etc. properly in the presence of things which are Mahara, things which are interfering with the Kedusha of the Dvarim Shebe Kedusha themselves? So based on that understanding, Chazal then extrapolated and said, well, sometimes you can have a situation where a person is not really looking at Erva. This is not halachic Erva. Erva only means the first category. Elohat, there are other things that halacha prohibits b'shum hirur. It means any time a person is in a situation of where there's a potential of inappropriate thoughts, he shouldn't be involved in Dvarim Shebe Kedusha. Don't belong to any place where there's something inappropriate present. So the Gemara never really meant to say that these things are mamish dino ke erva gomel l'chol dini ha-Torah, and this is mamish the pasuk l'erva erva's davar. All the Gemara meant to say is that there are other types of things that may also be distracting, such as tefach, kol, seyah, shok, etc., whatever they are. So just as you're not allowed to say Kriya Shema in presence of erva, so too you're not allowed to say Kriya Shema in the presence of these things as well. But the Gemara never meant to say that these things are mamish dino ke erva d'araisa. So at the end of the day, it sounds like, who cares, menach kamina? At the end of the day, you can't take Kriya Shema in front of real erva, you can't take Kriya Shema in front of these quasi-ervas. Menach kamina, whether we're formulating the din, is saying that these shok, tefach, etc., are dino ke erva. This is a halacha, ha-mifareshes, even in Kol Boker, we've used these terms a lot, or this is like a mechadeshes, this is a new halacha, separate and distinct halacha. At the end of the day, it's also, so who cares how you formulate it? So the chara, this basic formulation, these two basic formulations of this halacha, becomes the source of kama v'kavanaf k'minas ladina mamish halacha ma'isa ma'isa b'chol yom. So we'll try to give a little bit of a presentation as to what some of these nafkaminas are, and see how at the end of the day they all boil down to the same basic chakira. So comes the Shulchan Aruch in the third of the Mamakamas, as the following chiddush gadol and siman ayin heisi yavav. Hoysa erva kinekzo. What if this mamisha, a woman totally completely undressed, really literally erva in front of him, and the mice says, he has nowhere to go, the guy can't get out of the way, he has to say Krishna, he has to bench, he has to say, so he has to daven. So what should he do? So says the Shulchan Aruch, the hechsir panav mimena, so he turns his head away, he doesn't look, osha otzen eina, or he closes his eyes, osha huba laila, or it's in the middle of the night, he can't see, osha suma, or he's blind, Mutalikresh comes to Shulchan Aruch in one fell swoop and says, if you can't see the erva, for whatever reason, your eyes are closed, you turn your head, whatever it is, so then the whole mitzvah doesn't apply. What did the Shulchan Aruch just do? He just took the first Ramah Makamos and turned it in our favor. The first Ramah Makamos said that if you have erva that's covered with something which is see-through, so you're not allowed to say Kriya Shema, because the erva, the re'iyat al rachamana, the Torah says, whenever you could see the erva, that's a problem. So the Shulchan Aruch said, Just as we said in the first of the Ma'amakamas, whenever you could see the error, there's a problem. So I'll tell you the corollary of that, says the Shulchan Aruch. Whenever you can't see the error, then it's not a problem. And the error is mamash right there, staring him in the face. Doesn't matter, as long as he's not looking at it, his eyes are closed, it's dark, he can't see, then this entire din doesn't apply. That's the tzach of the Shulchan Aruch. So comes the Mishnah Berurah on the fourth of the Ma'amakamas in Siman Ayin Hey, and points out that v'acharayin hiskimu, the chol elu ha'etzus levat, none of these etzus work, levat achzeras panim lo mahani, the lo ksiv lo sira, el v'lo yira, rotzaloma lo yira ha'roe, v'afilo achzeras panim shehuta lo, rak, I'm sorry, who rak daft in hechzik ha gufo ve'omu b'tzad acher, the nasa se erva mitzidoi, aval hechzik panav levat lo mahani, v'yum kenu me'at v'orab lo yitzu yishu meit yishem mutlo david t'ar t'arra. Come to Mishnah Berurah, one fell swoop and says, this whole Shulchan Aruch is not right. From beginning to end, says the Mishnah Berurah, closing your eyes is garish kelsa, doesn't solve anything. Closing the lights doesn't help anything. Turning your head doesn't solve the problem either. The only thing that solves the problem, says Mishnah, you turn your body totally around, so then you're like in another Rishus. That's a different story. But just to close your eyes and just to look down at something, that's lomah lomah. It doesn't minimize the Isser at all. There is no head to that, because what you can't see, if the Erev is in front of you, so then it's a problem. That's the tzak of the Mishnah Berurah. So most of the folks who make the Mishnah Berurah points out the paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, so we generally don't accept the Shulchan Aruch in this particular halacha. We paskin halacha like the Achras Acharonim, that closing one's eyes does not solve the problem. Closing one's eyes, turning one's head, looking down, turning off the light, garnish, lamalav lemeir. However, even though we paskin that closing your eyes doesn't help, or looking, just looking down a little bit doesn't help, one could raise the following question. When do we say that closing your eyes doesn't help? Maybe that's only true when it comes to real erva. When mamish completely undressed, erva mamish, so then maybe closing your eyes doesn't help. What about, Baruch Hashem, we haven't yet stooped to that level, Baruch Hashem, that's usually not the shaila. Usually the shaila is, woman is a little bit dressed, but unfortunately many of the parts of the habadi, the chazal speak about, the shoka is exposed, she's singing, the tefach b'isha, but many, many things are exposed. So the guy's the guy sitting on the train, he wants to be Mavis Sedra, and there's somebody sitting opposite him who's not dressed appropriately. So can he do that or not? Can he say the words? Can he eat an apple? Can he make a bracha? Can he say Krishna when there's somebody who's not dressed appropriately? Does it help just to close one's eyes? Does it help just to look down a little bit? Does it help to turn his head a little bit? So the Shulchan Aruch said it doesn't work. So maybe one could argue, when does it not work? That's the Gavi Erev Lamish. Well, Agavi, all these other halachas of sugya number two, of brachas chavalid, of tefach, and seyah, and kol, and shok, all those other things, maybe closing one's eyes helps, maybe turning one's head helps. So what should that depend on? So the chor, that depends on hachakira. If you hold that the halacha is telling us that all these other areas are defined as erva, this is it, this is what the Torah Kadesh had in mind when it said, well, yurducha erva's government, all of these areas in the woman's body are called erva and simish, no antis and buts, then just as the